companies will hire a nice person with a mediocre portfolio over an asshole with a great portfolio. And you know what? If they are hiring assholes with good portfolios, you don't want to work there. So, there you go.
There you go.
You're listening to the CG Spectrum Podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepp and CGS Mentor Justin Mulman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
Justin, I'm so excited because this week I got to talk to a really good friend of mine, David Cunningham. He is a lead hard surface modeler at DNEG. I used to work with him back at Mr. X. That's how we met. He also talks about mentoring and how to kind of move up in your career and how mentorship really helped him kind of figure out his life. And now he's doing that with other people.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I love DNEG mix, and I'm really curious to hear what he has to say as being a hard surface modeler. It's a fascinating role.
Yeah, I mean, we just had a really good chat. It was a lot of fun. So I think you'll like it a lot.
Yeah, so I'm a lead hard surface modeler at the moment. And
are you sure about that?
I said at the moment, like it could be taken off me. You know? the confidence I said that was a bit scary. Yeah. No, because it's a new role for me, and it's a bit, mm-hmm. you know, I'm still finding my feet, and it's a bit scary. And it's VFX, yeah, everybody, yeah. especially everybody above me, the VFX producer and CG Supes and everyone, it's all so knowledgeable, and it's kind of intimidating. When you're sat in meetings and, you know, I'm just a modeler and they're talking about on-set cameras, getting angles and all this. I don't know. To me, that sounds technical because I just push polys around.
I know. Like, I feel that way too sometimes. Like when people talk about on-set stuff, like even when I was back in school, like I went to like a school, I specialized in VFX. All of the other people in my program that were interested in film, like everyone wanted to be on set. And even like, over 10 years ago now, that was like the last thing I wanted to do. I was like, ooh, wait, there's studios? I could go 9 a.m. to you know, 6 p.m. I mean, 6 p.m.
Yeah.
But, you know.
That's a short day.
6 p.m. Yeah. But, you know, I was like, oh, 9 a.m., that sounds great, you know. And all of my friends and my old coworkers watching this are going to be like, Maxine, 9 a.m., you're a 9:30 gal. Walk in with your coffee. I'm like that meme you see of, like, the chick and her coffee of, like, strolling in at, like, 9:30 or 10.
Yeah, sorry there was traffic in the Starbucks.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember even back in school being like, oh, this on-set stuff with this call time, this 5 a.m., 6 a.m. call time, what's that all about? No, I never liked that. So I'm happy that you share my my feelings. People start talking about on-set and, like, my eyes glaze over. Like,
yeah, it sounds super stressful. It sounds super interesting.
Someone else is doing that.
But super stressful,
So let's start at the in the beginning.
In the beginning.
Let's start at the beginning. In the beginning, mm-hmm. Young David, tell me how you got into 3D modeling.
I really, like, I've been playing, let's go way back. So I've been playing, like, video games for, like, you know, since it was, like, you know, the stigma was, like, so, like, oh, you're such a nerd, like, you play video games. Like, that was me. I was that nerd. And so, like, that always really interested me. So I done a course in video game design at college, and that was just like, that was a brand new course, and it was one of these ones that was like media studies but just like rebranded into games, and it was it like sucked. But like that and it was super easy, and I breezed through it, but it was interesting. That got me into like Unity, and I touched modeling on that, and then from there I did game design at university in Leeds in the UK, and that was also interesting. But I was like looking at the game design on a whole. I wanted to do like level design and all that sort of stuff, and like this course is very, very like 3D orientated, and so I've done a lot of 3D, and I'm glad because I really loved it. And if I wanted to do programming, it would have been a horrible course to take because there was none of that. But yeah, I remember when I graduated, and I remember talking to my lecturer at the time, And I remember saying to him, like, oh, I don't know what to do. I might do this, I might do that. And I remember him saying, if you don't become a modeler, I'm going to f***ing kill you. So I was like, all right. guess I'm being a modeler.
The rest is history.
And the rest is history, as they say. No, but it's been pretty rocky. Like, it's not been straightforward. I know a lot of people go from school into VFX, but that wasn't the case in my day.
Yeah, me neither.
Because I really wanted to get into game design, and at the time when I graduated in 2013, it was like super hard, super, super competitive. And there were so many talented artists that went to like much better universities who've been doing 3D for ages. And like game design back then, I don't know if it's different now, especially the entry level, super underpaid. And all 3D work at that level, like for me anyway, was super underpaid. But it was super underpaid and super competitive. So I just couldn't find a job. So I didn't realize actually that there's other 3D jobs that existed outside of games and movies. And like, especially movies was something that was like, VFX was something that was just so far in the distance. I was like, oh man, like I need 10 years in advertising. I need 5 years in this. Like I'll never get that. Oh, that's way down the line. Like that is just so in the back of my head. Which is so crazy to think of now, because you know people are coming out of school straight into VFX studios. But I managed to get a job as a 3D visualizer, and I didn't know what that was, but it had 3D in the names, and I needed a job, so I took it.
I love that you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but
yeah, I was like, whatever. And I remember the interview and like my recruiter just being like, yeah, they like do stuff for like big arms companies. Like, so you'll be like doing tanks and like all this. I'm like, yeah, it's just like sick. Like, I'm gonna be doing tanks, I'm gonna be making tanks all day. And I remember getting there and it was just trains. And that was it. Just trains for 3 years.
And that's where it all began.
And that's where the Odyssey began, yeah. And I learned a lot about things I didn't want to learn about.
Like what?
Like trains.
Fair.
But it kind of opened my eyes a bit, because we mainly done two things. One was like one of these things was to recreate entire trains. We would go down to the station and photograph the hell out of a train, and then come back and then just model it, because we wouldn't supply CAD in case we plan to use that for malicious intent or something. I don't know, but they just wouldn't give us the CAD. So we had to photograph a train and then model it. So everything was modeled, like every nut and bolt, everything.
That's kind of cool, though, that you had to go through that process.
Yeah.
You know, like it sucked that you had to do extra work, but now in hindsight, that kind of stuff helps you use reference as a modeler now. 100%. Like in film and
100%. And then, you know, like you learn about stuff that like, you know, like camera distortion and all that sort of stuff, and things you don't really like think about, but then it gives you a lot of experience in that. The first day of that job was a bit of a shock, because, you know, I come in and I got told by the recruiter, you'll be making tanks and all this sort of stuff. And I come in and I sit down my first day and my boss goes, we got a special task for you, David. And I'm like, oh boy, it's a tank. Yeah. I'm going to make a tank.
Yeah, it's a tank.
And like now I'm just like, you know, whatever, straight out of school. So like bright eyed. And it's like, okay, we got this task for you. We need you to assemble something. I'm like, assemble a tank. Got this. And he's like, we bought some Costco chairs and they need assembling. And I'm like, okay. And there's these brand new leather Costco chairs. And they're like, yeah, we got these old, crappy, tatty chairs. Can you, like, assemble some new chairs? So I was like, yeah, okay. Like, I suppose I can build some chairs.
You're like, digitally
assembled? Yeah, like, and, like, this isn't going any, philosophical direction. Like, I'm not going to be like, whoa, this opened my eyes. And this, no, this is bullshit. Like, they made me build someone's chair. And so I built all these chairs. And I remember these gorgeous leather chairs. And I remember giving them out to people. I build one, give them out to someone. And then I built the last one. And I remember looking at it. And then I give it to, you know, the director or whatever. And I'm like, yo, I think we're a chair short. You know, I haven't got a chair. I don't think you bought enough chairs. And he just goes, you'll learn yours in time. And I was just like, oh, man. This is an omen for how the rest of this job is going to go. So, yeah.
Great first day.
Yeah, that was a great first day. One job after that, I pretty much had it. I nailed the interview, nailed the art test. They were like, yep, come fly to Amsterdam, meet the team, meet everyone. So I, you know, woke up at 5 a.m., drove to the airport, flew to Amsterdam, took the train in the wrong direction to Rotterdam, had to call them and be like, can I delay the interview because I'm in Rotterdam? And then I had to get back to Amsterdam, take the right bus. And I was like in this nice blazer and just super sweaty because I've just been on a flight and been driving. And then I got there and then I met the team and I'm like, I'm so excited. And then, I remember getting home and they'd be like, oh, we've changed the specs of the job. So you're no longer needed.
After going all the way there too.
I have other similar stories to that. And now like whenever I get like a new job or whatever, I'm like, that job's not mine until my butt is in that seat. Because I'm like, anything can happen. Until you've signed that contract, like, and I mean, I don't think this
is not real
advice. I don't know, but this is just how I view my career. I'm just like, until something is signed, that's not yours. Because anything can happen. The industry's mm-hmm, so fluid. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, like a verbal, oh yeah, we love you. Like, that's not a job, you know. Even sometimes people, I've seen people like actually get contracts even, and yeah, then they pull it back or they send it back. They're like, okay, I signed it, and then the company like ghosts them.
Yeah, like, I got ghosted.
Sent the contract.
Yeah. I've been asked like, oh, what's your salary range? So I'm like, oh, what about this? Because it was in like Eastern Europe, and I didn't have a clue of like what the rates were, and like I was like, what about this? And they're like, oh, you're way too expensive. And I'm like, yo, I don't know, like, I don't know cost of living or whatever, like, you tell me. And then they just ghosted me. And I remember emailing them, be like, so do I still have a job? And they just didn't reply. So that sucked. But but you know, like, doors closing and opening and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's something to get used to. I mean, I kind of warn students that, yeah, like, just assume you will be rejected. And that's it's not just what I tell people, but that's kind of how I always saw things myself, too, is like, I assume every single job I apply for, I'm not going to get. Like, I apply and then I try to immediately, like, forget about it and just continue going on about my day. Like, even at Mr. X, I think, like, I applied for some job, but I wasn't like looking, like, I wasn't in need of a job. Like, I was currently working already, and it was like, oh, this seems like an interesting position. It was like the resource manager position. I was like, you know, this might be interesting because I'm interested in, I wanted to learn more about like how a studio runs, like, not just from a producer's perspective, but like, how do they actually manage people? Like, what's the back end like, how does all that work? And I would always have like problems with not having enough people. And so this job interested me because I was like, okay, I want to find out what it's like to actually be part of that process of hiring people and managing them and figuring out how many people we need for different projects. it's just as hard when you're in that seat, but whatever. But yeah, I applied for that job in February, I think. And I forgot about it. I was working. So I was like, I'm busy, whatever. And then, I heard back in, I want to say June or July that year, like months later. Like, I didn't even remember what I had even applied for at that point.
Yeah, like, send it and forget and just keep yourself busy. And like, especially when I was unemployed, I was just like, apply for one job a day anywhere, even if it's in the middle of nowhere, just apply. And then it's done and then forget about it. And then you've done your, you know, daily thing.
Yeah, because you could always deny. Like, if they get back to you and it's, like, not that cool of a position, you could always say no thank you, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, people...
And not go.
Yeah, I think people, and, like, myself included, get into this headspace of, like, I've applied for this job. Oh, my God, like, what if I have to move? And what if I do this? And what if I do this? And it's just like, yo, it's not yours to turn down until you've got an offer. Like, so just like, just calm down. Seeing a lot of it from the other side as well, and people applying for jobs, and like, you don't know what's going on in the company. You don't know what's going on with HR. You don't know if recruiting are understaffed. You don't know, like, there's so many different factors that go into it. And like, you know, if you apply for a job and your friend gets a reply and you didn't get a reply and you're like, what did I do? Sometimes it's just life, man. Sometimes it's just happens. So your email falls to the bottom, and it's just, it's all about timing. And sometimes, you know, you're just unlucky, but things
out. Obviously you have to have like some skill, but yeah, sometimes it's like timing too. I think from a student's perspective, because people ask me about this a lot, they're like, they applied to something, or sometimes even had an interview, and then they're like, when should I follow up with them? And like, half the time I'm like, just don't. I'm like, or wait, at least if you really want to follow up, because people have different opinions about stuff like this. Like, there's no right or wrong answer. Some studios appreciate a follow up because they're like, wow, what a keener. And then other places are like, leave me alone. but I was like, if you really want to follow up, like, wait at least 3 weeks. Like, any earlier, like, is just too soon, because like 1 or 2 weeks for a student or someone who isn't working feels like eternity. Yeah. Like, you're sitting there, you're waiting, you're like, oh my God. But then you have, you know, actually working in a studio, and it's like what you said, like, when you're on the inside and you're actually part of the hiring process. And especially when I was a resource manager, I saw this a lot. It was like, I would have the department heads like come into my office, talk to me about like, okay, like, these are the candidates I'm considering, or, you know, and sometimes it'd be like a couple for one job that they're considering. And they're like, oh, well, you know, and they'd have different reasons why they would be thinking about different people. And it wasn't just about their portfolio. It's sometimes it's like, well, we have this project coming in and we have that one, so they specialize in this. Yeah. Which would be nice for this, but not for that project. Or sometimes it was like personal scenarios. Like, I had one department head, and I love him for this, because he was the only one who was actually thinking about this, is he would also weigh things like gender parity on his team and be like, well, you know, this person is great, you know, and so is she, but, you know, if we hire her, then we're back on par with gender parity on my team, and it's something I'd like to maintain. And it was just so refreshing to hear someone think about that. And it was other fact. It wasn't like just because it was a woman, that's why we want her on the team.
No, like, but these, like, were, if you've good got
candidates
it
at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you've like, especially like if you've got a team full of guys, and if you get a woman in, then you've got a different perspective on things as well. And like, and that goes for like, you know, any sort of diversity thing. So it's, and like, and especially like, you're working in engineering, it's all dudes, all guys. And then when I started working in VFX, I was like, whoa, like, there's people that aren't white guys here. Like, this is so different. But it was really refreshing.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to CG Spectrum for helping make this podcast happen.
CG Spectrum is an online animation, VFX, digital painting, and game development school that prepares you for a career in film and games. Whether you're just starting out or you're upgrading your skills, get personalized career training and mentorship from industry pros who have worked on blockbuster films and best-selling games. Courses are 100% online, and you can choose from one-on-one private mentorship options or group classes with just 4 students max. You'll also get access to career support services and join an awesome community full of like-minded creatives just like you. Learn more at cgspectrum.com. We're bringing the industry to you. But yeah, it was funny you say that whole like moving thing. I was thinking of a student actually that I talked to this week, and she's still studying, so she hasn't even started applying for jobs yet. But she was already like, well, what if I have to leave? And she was like, in the Netherlands. She's like, I'm like, okay, so you can consider any job within the EU if you want, if you're willing to move, because, you know, you have that citizenship. So I'm like, that's great. There's a lot of opportunities and blah, blah, blah. She's like, yeah, you know, but she's also weighing like happiness, and she likes living where she is now. And then she was worried. She's like, but what if like I have to get a job in France, and then I have to think about moving and or another country? And I'm like, hey, let's hold on until you get that offer in France or wherever. Like, you don't have to think about this.
Yeah.
Don't stress about this what if until you get that offer, you know, and even then you can still say no if you can weigh your options, you know, but it is scary sometimes as a student because you just don't know. And you're like, should I move? Like, should I even not even apply to those jobs? Because what if I don't want to move and live in that country? And it's like, I just tell people to apply as much as possible. Like, kind of like you did. You're like, every day I'm going to apply somewhere.
Yeah.
Even if it's kind of like a kind of job. But just see what happens, you know, and see which places are even interested in you. Because what if you're avoiding jobs for one reason, but what if they're like, oh, yeah, actually, it's cool that you stay there. Or what if they're not interested in you anyway? And you're like stressing about this and like they don't even want you. Like,
yeah. And I think like when you're a student, I don't think you realize it when you're in it. But like looking back, why not move? Like, would you... If you've got these two decisions, like, would you rather stay where you are and regret not moving, or would you rather move and try it out and regret staying? Because, like, I know which I would much rather take the opportunity and then just come back home than never know what my life, than never know what my life could have been like.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, a lot of the students I work with are older, so they're not just like straight out of uni, like, you know, 20 years old or whatever. So she did have like a more nuanced scenario, sure. Mm-hmm. But still, it's like, let's wait until you get the offer. I'm like, you're stressing yourself out over like a hypothetical and you haven't even applied anywhere yet. Like, I haven't even looked at your resume yet. Like, let's finish the portfolio first. Then we can check out the resume, then we can start job hunting, you know, and then if you have an interview that goes well and then they give you an offer, that's when you can start to talk to your partner, figure stuff out. Okay, is this worth it? You weigh, you know, the salary versus the moving aspect and this and not seeing your friends and, you know, but there's also benefits to moving. Like, you know, you go to another country and yes, it sucks to miss your friends, but hey, now your friends have like a place to visit and you know, and you make new and friends, like, and
coming to Montreal for me was like such a big thing, and like it gives you a chance like to move. It gives you a chance to sort of like reinvent yourself and like and like kind of like be who you want to be, and like especially like in the UK, there's all of the, and I don't know if this is like anywhere else, but like for me there's all this social pressure to settle down and get married, buy a house. Why are you renting? Like, renting's stupid. You're just throwing money away. You're just paying for someone else's mortgage. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't want to commit to a mortgage. Like, I don't know where I want to be, but like, everyone, all my friends are telling me that this is something I have to do because that's what they're doing. And, you know, and it's stressful. And then I moved away and I moved here and everyone's just like, house, mortgage, what mortgage? You know, and they'll be in their 40s, 50s. They don't care. They're happy. They're just going city to city working. It's just like, whatever, like, who cares? And it's just like so chill and laid back. And I'm just like, okay, like, I'm so glad that there's people with like a similar mindset, and it's, you know, refreshing.
What made you decide to move here?
Okay.
It's Canada.
So, like, Canada's always been in like the back of my mind, you know, but it's always been so far away.
People keep saying that, and I'm like, really? Why?
It is
a nice country. I mean, I'm very happy here, but I've heard a lot of people say that. They're like, my dream has been to move to Canada. I'm like,
but when I left Fivelands, my first job, and I was just looking for anything, and I applied for a job, this technical communicator job. I failed the art test, like, abysmally for that job. And my old boss still gives me shit for it to this day. Like, still gives me crap for failing it.
How did you feel? Like, what did you do wrong?
I was so angry. So it was in the automotive industry. For the art test, we had to like render a brake disc. And I remember going down and I remember being like, okay, is this in V-Ray? And they were like, yes, V-Ray is installed on the machine. It's all in V-Ray. And I'm like, I am going to nail this art test because all I do is sit in 3ds Max and render stuff on V-Ray. This is easy. So I remember sitting down at the desk, and like, you're sat at the desk and you're sat like surrounded by everyone. So there's people on your left and there's people on the right working. and I'm sat on this computer, and like,
so it was like an in-person art test.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh. Back in the day, it was all in person.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Now they like, you send it, they're like, you got 2 weeks, you know.
It's like, come at the office, model this thing, or like do this thing. And there wasn't that much modeling in this job. It was just like a lot of rendering and camera animating and stuff like that. And I went to click on V-Ray, and it was like, bling, V-Ray isn't installed on this. So I remember like going over to my interviewer, my old boss, and being like, hey, like, is this supposed to be in V-Ray? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, because it's not installed. And he was like, oh, just use Mentalry instead. And I'm like, I haven't used, I've completely forgotten how to use that. So I like was like sat in Mentalry. I'm like, I think this is how you do a light. And then I think this is how you apply an HDRI. And I think this is how, and like time was like running out. So like, I just got a render out and it just looked crap. And I was so pissed because I was like, man, if this is in V-Ray, like I would have got the refraction index perfect and all this on the breakdown. I'm like, oh man, like I didn't know how to do any of that in Mentalry. And yeah, so I left and I was like, yeah, I remember being like, yo, I couldn't get anything else. I couldn't get anything out. And he was like, yep, no worries. Like, let's go upstairs and talk. Anyway, I ended up getting that job because I just, my charisma probably carried me through the interview. But yeah, no, but I only planned on staying in that job for like 6 months. I was like, I'm just going to get it and I'm going to keep applying for jobs and then leave. But
yeah, it wasn't like a dream job. It was just like
it wasn't a dream job.
Better than the last one.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, this will just give me a little stepping stone to get to the next step. And I was there for 3 years because I just loved it so much. The people were amazing. My boss, Lee Thornett, shout out to him, is fantastic. He like, I think it really makes a difference when you work in a company where people recognize your skills and reward you for it. You don't feel like you have to prove yourself, and like, you know, I'd go the extra mile for myself, you know, like to, because I wanted to get this work done and I want to get this done. And he would put me on things like this leadership program. So he put me on a leadership program with a few other people.
And this was like an internal program? Like
an, yeah, so this is an internal leadership program.
That's so nice when companies do that, huh? Like,
yeah,
not every place does that.
Yeah, and it was like, we want to train you how to be a leader. And like, you know, you don't get that in VFX.
R.I.P.
And like, they teach you all these skills. And then they were like, oh, we're going to teach you how to do like coaching. So I was like, what's that? And it's like a lot of self-reflection and like looking at things objectively, and like we had to do a lot of exercise. So it's like a 1 or 2 week intense course of like 8 hours a day of being in this room and doing all these coaching exercises and doing things like Nirvana letters, where you have to like write a letter to like a best friend, but in the perspective of where you are in 10 years time. So I would be like, Maxine, right now I am working for my own company and I am living in Canada, and it's just like stuff like that. And it really, really makes you like, it just makes you reflect a bit on like how you approach things and what your goals are in life. So
it teaches you. I mean, if you can imagine it, you can like, you can visualize yourself there. And that's like half the battle, is like, if you can imagine yourself somewhere or you have this goal, then you can slowly start to plan like the steps of how to actually do it. You're like, 100%. Okay, you know what? Maybe it won't happen. Maybe 5 years in, the goal shifts or something like that. But just to have that, if you're just going blindly day to day, like it's hard to make any progress because you don't know what you're working towards, aside from like more money. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, or and like then going from junior to mid to senior, and it's like, that's fine too, but what's next? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And at like the end of this leadership program, and this is like going to sound like such a, like a cheesy story, but it happened, and it was just so weird. It happened.
I love cheesy stories.
My two people doing the leadership training, David and Paul, they got me into a room and just have a one-on-one, and they had this piece of paper. It was split into quarters, so it was in four sections. And they said, okay, David, like, where do you see yourself on this piece of paper? And on the bottom, it said, I don't want to be a leader. I have no like ambition in being a leader. I just want to get on with my life. I'm fine coasting, whatever. And the next one was like, maybe I do want to be a leader. I want to, you know, but I'm not ready. I don't want to do this. And like, maybe in, you know, 10 years time or whatever, like I'll get this someday. And then the next one was like, I want to be a leader, but I'm lacking something. And then the final one was like, I am a leader. This is like who I am. So they were like, where do you see yourself? And I was like, okay, I think I'm in the third box. I am at this. I want to be a leader, but I'm lacking something. So they say, what do you think you're lacking? Because coaching is all about like asking these open questions and making you talk about it. Because when you talk about it, you open up stuff in your mind. So I'm like, well, I don't think my technical skills are there. And I think when you have to be a leader, you have to know everything so you can tell people what to do. And like, you can lead by example and all this. So they say, well, we think you're in a different box. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, we think you're here. And they point at the fourth box, which is I am a leader. And they were like, and I was like, well, that's sweet. But I was like, but you're not me. You don't like know like what I'm technically skilled at. And they were like, well, we'll tell you what you're missing. And I'm like, shit, what am I missing? Like, I bet it's technical skills. I bet I need to do more of this. So like, no, like, this is what you're missing. And then they turn the, and I shit you not, they turn the paper around and it's just got believe on the back. And they were like, all you're missing is self-belief. You need to believe in yourself and you'll be there. Dude, I broke down. I lost it. I was just like a mess. And like all these realizations of like everything I sort of wanted in my life sort of like just came to like the front of my brain. And I was just like, this is, yeah, I think I do know what I want. And I think I just need to have the confidence to get it, because a lot of the time it's about self-confidence and it's about feeling like you can get there, and then
seeing a space for yourself, you know, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and then
there is a seat for me, there is a chair for me in this studio.
Exactly. And then from that
and I
point,
didn't build it either, someone
else
not
did. A train. And then from that point 2 months later, Maxine, I had broken up with my girlfriend. And I was in Canada.
Wow. Just like after that. Were your employers supportive? Because they're the ones who pushed you to do that leadership course.
Yo, so many people quit after that course.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh.
But like, and that's, but they still, they teach that in coaching now. And they say like, and especially DNEG, they say it's okay if you coach someone out of the job. Because they weren't happy there and they don't want someone at the company that's not happy. So that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you're just making them realize it. Would you rather have, you know, someone else that wants to be there or someone that's really not happy and then leave? So it was super weird. So I went on the internet and I went on the internet. I went on the internet. End of story. That's me. No, so I went on the website that had all these VFX companies, right? And I must have done it reverse alphabetically because like Mr. X was like top. And I was just like, Mr. X, don't know who they are. Apply. I applied and then like I got an interview and I was just like, what the hell? And there was no art test. Amazing. And I interviewed with...
We were too busy for art tests.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'd never want to do an art test ever again.
But also Paul, like, who was your manager at the time, I think he had, or has, you know, he's still with us. he's at a different company now, but he has such a good eye and a back end. Like, I don't think that he needed art tests every time, you know, to really know someone's abilities. Like, he was able to tell really quickly just from looking at a portfolio and seeing what he had to see. He had a really tight team. Like, he was such a great manager.
He and like that, like X and Semcon, where I've had two amazing managers I've just loved, because you have such a great team and they make you feel like really, you know, involved, and you have such good camaraderie. And then I had 4 months of living that hilarious VFX studio life before I started working from home. And I am still working from home to this day because of the pandemic. So that was pretty crazy.
Yeah. So tell me about, you know, going from Mr. X, you know, now being at DNEG and like working your way up to senior positions and then lead. Plus now you're a coach. You're like, you've come full circle. Tell me about tell me about that and like how you're coaching people now.
It's super weird because I was a senior at this engineering company, Semcon in the UK. And then I come into VFX and like I'm like they put me in as like mid junior-ish because like a lot of the times if you don't have experience in VFX, it means you've never done anything in your life ever. And that is a lot of the time is how you are viewed. It's like, oh, you're a child that has never worked a day in your life.
Yeah.
When really I've got, you know, all of this experience. And especially like working in a smaller company, like I would do animations that were like, I would storyboard it, I would script it, I would meet with the branding manager of the automotive company, I would do this, and I would go back and forth, and like, and I would like have to animate a comp it, do all this, you know? So like, I've got a lot of experience, especially as a generalist, and then you sort of, you get pigeonholed, which is fine, because that was the job I signed up for. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but you're just, you know, honing your skills a bit. But X, like when I joined, that was really, really tough. The first day, I remember thinking, I've made the worst mistake of my life. This is horrible. The first day being like, can you model this hero thing in 2 weeks? Like, can you work 50 hours this week? Can you do this? And I'm sat there like, bro, I don't even know how to launch Maya. I didn't even know how to use Maya.
Oh, yeah, because you're in 3ds Max,
because I was doing from 3ds Max, yeah. So, like, yo, I was so stressed, and I nearly quit, and I was, like, nearly caved, but, like, I sort of just powered through, and then, sort of fell in love with it. So, yeah, then I moved into, like, a senior position at X, because a lot of the time I was, like, training new people, showing them how to use the pipe, and all of that sort of stuff. And like, I know I've got good experience with people and all that sort of stuff. So like, naturally, I just adopted that role as like the go-to person to train up new people. Then I left a year ago and joined DNEG. And I remember they sent out an email saying, does anybody want to be a career coach? And I was like, yo, 100%. This, not to, again, sound cliche as hell, but this changed my life.
Yeah.
Like, I moved country and got out of a relationship that I wasn't happy in and all that. And I really sort of, like, started to be a bit more introspective of how I looked at things. And I'm like, if I can give someone the tools to do that as well.
If I could be a home worker. I know you...
Yeah.
And cause people to...
Oh, my God.
If I could help I people to break up with way. Their girlfriends or boyfriends and leave the country.
I never looked at it in that way. No, because I know you guys do mentoring, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And like this, so I'll just point out the differences between the mentoring and coaching just for people that don't know. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people get them confused and think it's the same thing, but it's actually completely different. So a mentor would be someone with a lot of experience, giving advice to someone that doesn't have as much experience and they are in the same field. So that would be me, you know, showing a junior hard surface modeler the ropes and the best techniques and all that sort of stuff. And I would give them advice based on my experience and my knowledge. And that's sort of a bit more of mentorship. Whereas coaching, you don't need to know anything about that person's sort of role. It's purely like giving someone the emotional tools to look at things sort of objectively and figure out a goal and how to get there.
Mm.
So the two most common things I use are something called the GROW model, which stands for goal, reality, options, and then your willingness.
Okay.
So you establish a goal. So what is your goal? You want to become a lead or something like that. Is this realistic? What's the reality of doing this? And, you know, this could be for like anyone. I don't have to. This I could be coaching a VFX supervisor who's got, you know, 40 years experience in all this. But, you know, I'm just like asking questions and asking open questions and making them think about it. So they'll say, you know, like, yeah, I think it is. I think it is a reality. I'm like, okay, what are your options? How can you get there? It's like, all right, well, I'm not, you know, good enough for this. Okay, so how can you get better at this? And then it's just all that. And then are you willing to do that? Are you willing to put in the effort? And then they might be like, well, actually, I'm not. Okay, so how do we circle back around and how do we address this then? It's kind of like talking into a mirror a bit, but except the mirror's just saying, but why? And like, how does that, give you conflicting feelings and all that sort of stuff? So it's pretty powerful. And another thing I use a lot is something called the circle of influence. And that's sort of objectively looking at what your worries are and what your concerns are and seeing if they are in your control or not. You know, so you might say that I'm worried about what this other person thinks of me. It's like, you have no control over this person's feelings. What can you control? What can you do? Okay, well, I can do this and I can work harder and I can work this in my own time because this is in my control. And like just putting stuff into like graphs and like even just writing stuff and putting them in circles, like it really, like visualizing things really like really helps to see things a bit more clearly and what's actually a priority in your life.
Have you pulled the whole like believe thing? Have you done that?
I haven't. I'm not experienced enough to do that yet.
That's advanced level coaching.
that's high level stuff.
One day.
I know I've made it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's your new goal to like one day.
Yeah.
pull it out.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, you know, a few years ago, you made this choice to move. You're like, I want to work in the film industry. You made that happen. You wanted to be a 3D modeler. You wanted to be a leader. You're there. Okay. You did it. Pat on the back. How does it feel? Feels good. Hope it feels good. Yeah. Yeah. You're like, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
So what's next? You know, the coach in me now is asking you, like, what's your new goal? Like what's your 5-year plan now or 10-year plan?
Wow. Yeah. So you've got me thinking. So shall I let you in on a little secret?
Yes.
I think it's important to be self-aware when you, and this is some good advice. So I think it's, if I don't say so myself. So I think it's pretty important to be a bit self-aware when you're looking at your own skills, because I know that I am not the best modeler. And don't let anyone at my company hear that. Because I know I'm
you
not
know this
the best
is
modeler.
Public, right? This is gonna be on YouTube and I'm not, Spotify
I'm
and
like,
all the
there's
streaming
probably
like
it's fine. And there's probably students out there who can do what I do, like faster and better quality or whatever, but I know my strengths and I know that I'm shit hot with people and I know that I'm so much of a better leader and manager than I am an artist. And I know that in my past self wanted to do something super creative or whatever, but now I feel like my goalposts have sort of changed, and I think it's perfectly fine to change your goalposts later in life, because I think a lot of people, and I don't know if it's like a millennial thing, think they have to have this super successful thing and they have to do the whatever, the top of whatever. But I'm happy moving into more of a management role of something and having and developing a great team, because I think I just really want, and like that's what makes me sort of strive and like really gets me going, is that is to have a good team. And that's like all I really want. And like people, and especially in VFX, like people are saying like, oh, I want to work on this show and I want to work on this show. And they're like, God, David, what show do you want to work on? And I'm like, I couldn't give a shit what show I work on as long as I have a good team.
Yeah.
I will work on My Little Pony if I have a kick-ass team that is good banter. Mm-hmm. Like, I do not care. So, yeah, so that's sort of where I'm taking my skills at the moment. Who knows? This might change in a year. Might change my mind. But,
yeah, but
it's kind of fine to change your mind.
But it is. It is. And I think it's, like, yeah. so necessary to evolve yourself, like, based on, okay, this life experience, like, this happened to me in the last year, or this is what I've done in the past 5 years, and looking at it again, and, you know, I try yeah. to coach students as well to revisit these goals at every major life milestone. And that might be a unit of time. It might be like every year or 5 years. It might be on your birthday.
Yeah.
It might be, you know, when something major happens in your life, like you get a promotion, or you know, you move in with your partner, or whatever, you break up with your partner. You know, whatever happens, it's good to like take a step back and think about like, okay, what am I doing now? You know, a similar thing happened to me. If you asked me 5 or 10 years ago, Maxine, do you want to work for a school? I'd be like, no. Maxine, do you want to do a podcast? No. Yeah. I hated my voice my whole life, you know? Like, I was like, no one wants to listen to me. Actually helping people get into the industry or, like, figure out what they want to do with their life, I love it, you know? More yeah. than any credit I've gotten on a movie or a TV show, like, when someone messages me and says, like, Maxine, I got the job, or Maxine, I got an interview, like, nothing beats that. The fact that this is a job and not just a hobby for me is, like, amazing. But yeah, it's like things change, and like, yeah, there's other things that I value more now than a credit. And people ask me, like, oh, do you think you'll get back into it? And like, probably. But am I going to be aiming for like those AAA, like, or like blockbuster movies? Honestly, probably not. Like, it's like, I want to have a good team. I would rather work on like a funny Christmas movie for Netflix than like do some super stressful Marvel movie, you know? And it's like, they're all great. It's all good. But I want to work on something where like I have more, of a say, or like, you know, I can actually like contribute more and not just be a cog in the wheel, so to say. So, but yeah, it is important to like take a step back and think about like, okay, what do I feel like now? And it's totally fine to change your mind.
Yeah. And especially like with me and this whole train thing. I realize we've missed a lot of train stories.
We didn't talk about trains as much as we should have.
Yeah.
Let's take it back.
Because I nobody wants to be known for as like the train guy. This is the train expert or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like,
except for Francis and like, bourgeoisie, whatever his last name is. That's not his last name.
A national treasure.
The national UK treasure.
But like, that's just something like that's sort of been like memed out of me. Like, that's been assigned to me, and you can either be a dick about it, or you can either embrace it. And like, because I had all this train knowledge, I remember at Mr. X, we were working on Enola Holmes, and we did the big train fight sequence on Enola Holmes. And I wasn't on that show yet, but I was on another show. I think I was on The Alienist, and being around other people, and they were doing this train scene, and the supervisor, I remember looking, and she was saying, and you have to move the logs, move these logs and get the stones. And I'm like, move the logs and get the stones? Like, what are you talking about? And I looked over, and I was like, oh, the sleepers in the ballast. It's the proper term, sleep. And she was like, how did you know? And I'm like, let me have a look. I'm like, what are you doing? The ballast would never fall. That would be terrible for drainage. Is that even a 4.5-foot gauge? You would never have fish plates that close together. Are you kidding me? What
did
are you
screw
doing?
That clockwise or counterclockwise?
Yeah, exactly. And they were like, how do you know so much about trains? And I'm just like, don't ask. And then like, so I went on all the homes. I did a bit of the trains on that.
Word got out.
Yeah. And that's when Snowpiercer was next.
Yes.
And they were like, oh, David's a train guy. He can help on Snowpiercer. And I was just like, fuck. It's okay. I was like, I don't want to be known as the train guy, but you know, whatever. Like, Snowpiercer is kind of cool. Like, I had to texture this entire train, and it was a massive, massive challenge. And it was like, that show was really hard at the time because that was peak COVID in 2020. And all the companies were letting people go, and all the companies were taking on work that they didn't have people for because they were letting everybody go. So that was super stressful. But so, yeah, so there was Snowpiercer. And then I was like, haha, it's funny. I've done two train things. And then my last show at Mr. X was The Harder They Fall, and I had to model the train. And I was like, of course I have to model the train. Of course that came in for me. And at this point, I'm just like, you know, I'll just smash it out. So I smashed that out. And then my supervisor left to come to DNEG. And then I left X after I finished that show and came to DNEG. And my supervisor on The Harder They Fall also doing a train. And I was just like, ah, this is it. I just have to subscribe to this now. This is my stereotype that I am the train guy. And
yeah, you got typecast just like actors and stuff do, right?
Yeah, there was another show that's not out yet, untitled train show that I worked on at X. I'm sure I can't talk about.
Yeah, so we'll know. We'll find out eventually. Yeah.
Which? Yeah, yeah. We'll
see it on your IMDb page. Everyone, Google him.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. So before we finish up, I mean, I could talk with you for hours. Honestly, we have a lot of fun. We all know that I work for a school as well, so I'm mentoring people and helping them with their careers. So a lot of people watching this podcast are people who are trying to get into the industry. Hopefully there's some other people watching too, but I know that we have a lot of students and juniors like just trying to figure out like how can I get in, you know? So aside from finding those stepping stones and maybe some other industries like you did, do you have any other tips or you know, words of advice for people who are trying to get into this industry? You know, what would you share with some of these people?
I would say one of them is fake it till you make it, but I know that's very controversial, so I'm going to rephrase that because I don't want my supervisors to be like, what?
Yeah, and I still want to make sure my students know are doing their portfolios, like,
yes, exactly. Yeah. Don't fake that.
Yeah,
I would change that to say yes more because in SemCon, the second company worked at this automotive company, we had a job for a dishwasher come in. Super, super exciting stuff. Oh, washing machine, sorry, was the first one. And super, super exciting stuff. And I remember my boss, Lee, sat me and the other seniors down and said, we got this thing coming in and it's going to require water simulations, and it's going to require cloth physics, and it's going to require all this, and animating and rendering and all this sort of stuff. Do any of you guys know anything about that? Do any of you guys have experience or want to take that on? And like, we all kind of just like looked at each other, and it was a big silent, and I was just like, yep, fuck it, do that, yep, let's do it.
Yeah.
I've never used water simulation ever, but I was like, but I can go home and Google it.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's got that skill available to them to Google how to do something, especially with the resources now. Mm. I'm a very much a type of person that I'm just like, this will be done. This will be done. I don't know how it will, and I don't know how hard or how long I'll have to work, but I know it will be done. And that's what happened with that. And I absolutely knocked out the park, and we got loads more jobs come in, and that was great. And we scored a big contract with a client, so that was really, really good. And like, no decision is like really a bad decision, because like, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a job that I hated and all these other dumb things that happened along the way, you know, that this path that I went on to get here. And yeah, like I said, play to your strengths. I know I'm not the best modeler in the world, but I am great with people and I'm great with this, and I can follow instructions and I can be coherent and I can communicate and be transparent when other people don't have them skills. So I know I'm good at that. So that I play to that strength. Yeah. Lastly, it's just be a nice person, because that will get you so far in life if you can just, you know, just be a nice person. Like, just, you have a rapport with someone and you will companies will hire a nice person with a mediocre portfolio over an asshole with a great portfolio. And you know what? If they are hiring assholes with good portfolios, you don't want to work there because that will be toxic. So yeah. There you go.
There you go. I like that though. And I think like an important thing to mention, you're like, oh, I guarantee you that I'm not the best modeler. And like, I'm sure that's true. But first of all, I don't know if it is like quantifiable to even figure out who is the best. Like, I bet you if I rounded up every single modeler in the world, yeah. It's like so much of that ends up being subjective. And I bet you even if we could figure out who the best person is, if you ask them who the best modeler is or if they're the best model, they'd probably say no too.
Yeah, we all have imposter syndrome.
Yeah, yeah. Or there's always someone else that they're looking up suffer. To. Yeah, we all suck.
yeah.
But it's like there's always somebody else that's going to be better than you and there's going to be twice as many people that are worse than you, you know? So stop worrying about the where you're at and just like
exactly
focus on you. Do what you can. I love that. Do like, what can you control? What do you have control over and work to fix those things?
And one more.
Yeah, one more.
One of my friends gave me this advice. It is, there's no secret handbook. There's no handbook someone has read that you can't read that gives them the skills. They have put in hard work and they've put in the graft and they've sat after work and worked on their portfolio. And that's all you need to do. There's no magic spell. There's no secret handbook. It's just hard work and studying. And
yeah. And there's no like right way either. Like there's so many ways to get to where you are now. Like you as a lead artist now, as someone who's coaching people, who's, you know, who's worked on these titles, there's probably other people who are at your level as senior artists or as leads. And they took some different paths. You know what I mean? Some people, maybe they did start at a VFX studio first, or maybe they didn't, or they started somewhere else. And it's like, none of that is like right or wrong. It's just a different road, you know?
And it's not a failure if you don't get into a VFX company and you get into a train company, because you know what? You're still gaining experience and these skills are all still relative.
Yeah. No one can take those skills away from you. This is fantastic. Yeah. This is so inspiring. Like, this I feel inspired. I'm like ready to go take the day, you know? Like, I'm not working anymore today. No, I'm joking. I got work to do, but pleasure talking to you. And there's so many good tips. I don't even know where to start, but we talked about a lot of stuff. So it was cool to hear about your experience and your history. Yeah. Thanks, David.
Oh, thank you. It was great. It was great to be on. And it's always nice to just have a chat with you, isn't it?
Thanks for listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. For more on this episode, visit us at cgspectrum.com/podcast. Check out our show notes where you'll find links to our guests and more behind the scenes. And if you're enjoying the show, please like, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening, or share this episode with someone who might like it. See you next time.